Are you really? That's so funny. Thank you. And thanks again for doing this, Ron. Thank you. Can I tell you my intro while you're setting that up then? Ron Simons is a Tony Award-winning Broadway producer. He won his first Tony. I'm gonna switch over to Zoom. Hold on.
Oh, look at you. I love that top. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let me hang up the phone.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, I am dark.
There you
Oh.
are.
Yeah, but I'm kind of dark. Let me
Piece of that
see.
window, that window, right? Piece of that window.
Okay, exactly. Hold on. Let me unplug all this stuff and move.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on.
Jim. Simon's Ron. Let's see.
Oh, sorry, my thing's got to miss. Hey, can you see me?
Let's see. Not yet. There you are. Yeah, that's good.
Great. Let me see the universe.
Yes. Yes, Jesuit. Thank you. All right, Ron, I'm gonna read this to you before I officially do it. Like, Ron
Okay.
Simons is a Tony Award-winning Broadway producer. He won his first Tony Award for the 2012 revival of Porgy and Bess, and most recently, his most recent Tony is for Jitney in 2017. He has a total of four, count them. He's one of the producers of the Broadway musical Ain't Too Proud, which is the story of the Temptations by Dominique Morisseau. And he's stewarding and trailblazing a new generation of Black Broadway producers by having us. That's right, I'm included as one of his mentees. I'm his biggest fan. He is currently working on a project called Blue, which we'll talk about, and I'm very excited to have him here. Is that good? Is that okay?
That's perfectly fine by me, darling.
Okay, good. All right, then I'm gonna get it started because I want you to be able to get off and go on to the next thing. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
All right, Ron Simons, who's one of my amazing mentors, is my guest on today's Power 15, which is my 15-minute podcast. In case you didn't know, he's a Tony Award-winning Broadway producer. He won his first Tony Award in 2012 for the revival of Porgy and Bess. He has a total of four Tonys. Count them. The most recent one was for Jitney in 2017. One of his most recent projects was Ain't Too Proud, which is the story of the Temptations. Hello, Detroit, by Dominique Morisseau. And he's currently working on a project called Blue, which we'll talk about. I so happen to be one of his mentees. I'm so lucky to have him here. Thank you, Ron. Welcome to the Power 15.
Thank you so much, Sam. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm going to get started. My very first question is a little bit about Detroit. Is there anything about where you grew up, Detroit, of course, that influences your work ethic? Is there anything about being from here that you think has been a force of, or a reason why you've been able to be so successful? Anything about being from Detroit?
I feel like I cut my teeth growing up in Detroit because, I'm a kid. I grew up in the 60s and 70s in Detroit, so I was there when the riots happened. There are times during my lifetime where Detroit was deemed the murder capital of the world. So I feel like Detroit gave me three things. One, it gave me resiliency so that in times of stress or problem, I can struggle, push through. I think that it helped me think my critical thinking to think of problems not in the normal linear way, but think outside of the box. And I think that though this may be true of several cities and states around the country, my family was particularly committed to me being both educated and appreciative of the arts. Like we went to go see, plays, at the Fox Theater and a number of other venues, shows like My Arm's Too Short to Box with God and other productions that just got me. And I went to go see like plays that, and those are usually for African-American theater lovers, but I went to go see On the 20th Century, which was not a very diverse cast and not a very diverse audience, but I loved it nonetheless. So I feel that I got my appreciation for storytelling in Detroit. And it began even in high school, because I went to the University of Detroit High School. Hello, hey, representing Cub, go Cub.
You did.
And I was involved in the Harlequins, so I was one of the actors there. So that's where I began my love for the art of acting. So yeah, Detroit has been a major influencer in my life regarding what I'm doing now.
Great. And, you've been able, since you left Detroit and you're now in New York City as a Broadway producer, which we'll talk about how I strive for that one day. Sustainability is something that I'm always thinking about. How have you been able to sustain your career as a Broadway producer? For me right now, especially because of COVID-19, I don't even know what's going to happen in the next few months. So what advice would you give to a producer like myself about what steps we should take next to get right back into the full scope of the work?
Excuse me. Well, I would say and encourage you to constantly be on the lookout for opportunities. And even if you don't find opportunities, literally take time, every day, it could be as little as 30 minutes, and just think about what's possible. Because that, though it's a simple exercise, it can be very powerful. Because we, especially before COVID-19, we were a society that was running. For us to have down alone time was a rare thing. At least it was for me. I'm now meditating every day. I never consistently meditated. And there is a great benefit in meditating. Things come to me while I meditate. So whether you decide that you want to meditate or literally just sit quietly in a room with some peaceful music, think about what's possible. And it doesn't even have to be about the work. What's possible with your family? What's possible with your friends? What's possible with your career? And by you putting the energy into that thought, something will grow. And I think that for me in this process, answering the first part of your question, how do you continue to sustain a life? It is challenging, but I have like 20, 25 projects, in the pipeline, right? Because I don't know when one is going to get fully funded, and then it's going to be wait, hurry. We got to spend this, $2.5 million, whatever the case might be. So I think it's about keeping a nice pipeline of projects that you think will hit over time. Like there are projects that I know will not be completed for 5 to 7 years. Because it's literally, we're talking about the musical and we're talking about the thing. We haven't even hired a writer to write the book yet. Then I have a movie, which literally could come together. We get the director and the writer within a year. Do you know what I mean? Then I have two Broadway shows that once we reopen could be on stage, 2 or 3 months after Broadway theaters reopen their doors. So I think it's three things. Your intuition, listen to that. Meditate or take time to sit and think alone, quietly, with all the noise quieted, which I think will be easier now with COVID-19. And make sure that you are engaging a number of projects that will sustain you or come to fruition a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years down the line. That's my way to answer that question.
Yeah, and I have to, just for like anybody that doesn't know, Ron is a unicorn. I call him one because it's actually a factual name, because there's maybe 6 active Black producers who look like me on Broadway. And so I always consider it an honor to talk to you, Ron, and the unicorn name is accurate. So being that is the case, and because you're so busy, my question is, why make time for a mentee? like me? Like, why do you make time for me? And not just me, because I'm not your only mentee.
Well, here's the thing. You prefaced that question with the very reason. There are so few African-Americans or people of color in general who are behind the scenes producing on Broadway. We got a lot of Black folks on stage on Broadway, but there are very few of us. When I started producing 10 years ago, there were two, I was one of two Black producers. Well, three, there was a team of two and then there was me, and that was it. So when I came into the room, you know, I was the only man, a person of African descent, who was on the producing team, but there were none on the advertising, the marketing, the press. We just were absent. And it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that he who holds the key to the door that gets you on Broadway decides what is worthy enough to tell and what is commercial enough to tell. And honestly, I feel as though, I know that it's going to help storytelling if people who are making the decisions about what stories are being told are from the communities about which the stories, you know, are created. So that's why, you know, Dominique Morisseau, who wrote the book, Ain't Too Proud, when I was talking to Tom and Ira, I was like, absolutely, hands down, Dominique is the one. Because yes, she's gifted, as some, you know, not all, but many playwrights are, Black women playwrights, but she's from Detroit and she's a writer activist. So she gets it. I mean, she really, really gets it. So we need more people on this side of the formula to create the stories, to decide what stories are needed, you know, raise money for those stories and be in the driver's seat. Because if you're in the driver's seat, then you can in fact affect change on what's happening on the stages of New York City and Broadway. But you also get, if this is important to you, you know, bring other people of color into the fold. And so for me, yes, my main goal is producing. But not very far from above, below that is working to ensure that there is diverse population in the body of Broadway producers, because that's why I have five women, Black women, who I am, you know, mentoring, and you are one of them, and so proud of you and everything that you're doing. And none of them are like, whatever. If I decide to mentor you, you got it going on, because I don't have time to waste with somebody who's like, yeah, you know, because if you're not going to put in the work, then there's no point of me sitting here talking with you. Do you know what I mean? And so you put in the work. You have vision. You have plans. You are strategic. You see opportunities and you go lean into them. So it's really important to diversify. And that's been true for me, I think, because of growing up in Detroit, where there was mostly African Americans. And then when I left Detroit, I always found myself in rooms that I was the one of only a few people. That was true of Columbia College. That was true of my first job at HP. That was true of my second job when I was developing artificial intelligence-based software systems. All of my life, there has been an underrepresentation of people of color. And that experience has prodded me to give my life to not only telling the story of underrepresented communities, but bringing underrepresented story writers and creators to the fold.
Awesome. Well, kind of just speaking of one of the projects that you have in the mix of projects that you have, can we talk a little bit about Charles Randolph Wright's Blue, which is directed by Felicia Rashad? The show was actually going to begin previews on my birthday, which is April 27th, but, you know, obviously due to coronavirus, the world is on hold. But I do want to know, because I mean, you have to, it's exciting to have a producer answer this question, because I have you on my Zoom right now. What are you most excited about this work? Because I know it's going to happen. I'm excited to see it. What's most exciting about Blue for you? Is it the director? Is it the music? What is it?
That's a good question. Let me apologize because my phone is ringing over there. So that's what's this background noise. But I don't want to disengage from there. I'll go bother with that. It'll stop in short order. Anyway, so why am I excited about Blue? Well, I'm excited about Blue because it meets all three criteria for projects that I am passionate about. It is about underrepresented communities. It has high artistic integrity because of the people who are telling the story. And it has commercial viability because it is a play with music. And musicals tend to be more popular than plays. And if you can't have a musical, the next best thing is to have a play with a lot of music in it. And the quality of the people who are associated with this production is first class. first rate. Tony winners, Tony nominated people, you know, people who are star Emmy winners, you know, Grammy winners. It's a cavalcade of incredibly talented people. And even the story itself is a special story because it's not, I love drama, clearly. And there's drama in this piece, but it also has much texture. There's drama, there's humor, there, you know, there is inspiration. So for me, it is a story that is for all people, because some people I've talked to who are producers were like, oh, well, I'm not sure. You're going to have a hard time getting the theater going community, you know, to come up to Harlem. And with their, what's that code word for that is they're saying white people, because they are the most ticket buyers, you know, white women between the ages of 50 and 60, whatever, right? How, I don't think they're going to come uptown. And I had to explain to them that that population was actually the population that kept this product alive for so many years. You know, yes, we sold out and broke box office records for every theater where we premiered this show before it was supposed to come to Broadway. And one of those was Roundabout Theater. And if you look at Roundabout Theater demographics, most of the people don't look nothing like this, you or I. And even I, in my age, is a little young for those people. So those were people who understood and appreciated the story that though it was about an African-American family, it went much deeper. And everyone had an entree into the story because it is about a family and the love within a family. We just happen to have this lens of this African-American family in the Carolinas who made their money in the mortuary business. But the universal themes are still present. And a good story always, and its job is to focus on those universal themes and put it in a light that's different than the other 1,600 pieces that were done that had those universal themes. You know what I mean? So I'm just thrilled because it's a fun show. You know, it's captivating to me, the actors in it. Just the idea of Lynn Whitfield and Leslie Uggams playing the mother and daughter-in-law gives me chills because I could not think of a better duo than those two because they are going to be hilarious. Do you hear me? It is one of the easiest reads for a play that I've had in recent memory. And so I got excited about it. And don't even get me started about the music that Nona Hendrix wrote for the show. Off the chain. Yes, you hear me? Off the chain. This is some really good music. So we're thinking about how do we, you know, when do we record an album? Do we create it with just the music that's in the show now? Or do we ask Anona to continue to create a few more songs so that we have a full, you know, longer play album? I'm just so thrilled and feel so honored to be working with these people that it gives me great joy when I do anything about Blue, whether it's casting sessions, you know, whether it's the photo shoots, you know, whether it is the table reads, it is just sheer joy. And the good thing about it being the one of the two lead producers on the show is that I don't have to deal with anybody else's bullshit.
Yes.
The buck stops with me, which means everything stops with me. I don't have to worry about someone who is taking the vision and twisting it in a way that I don't think serves the story. Because the only reason we are here is to serve the story. That is the only reason. If we're not serving the story and you're just, you know, stroking your ego, please get away from me because that's not what I'm about. I'm about telling good story. Every single project that I take on, I think, and I think I'm mostly right, most of the time, is good story.
Yeah.
Then it's about getting good people to tell the good story. Then guess what? You'll have a good play.
That's it. You are so goals for me. You already know that, Ron. But the one thing I have to say, to be a good mentee, the one thing you always have to do is to be mindful of your mentor's time. And so I have one last question and then I have to let you go so I don't get in trouble. Where are you finding joy these days? You're at home, you're not able to be out and about in the world as you usually are. Where are you finding joy today?
I'm finding joy actually in a lot of places. I have a beautiful terrace, which is unusual in New York City, that I usually only spend time on when I have guests or a party or a function or whatever. I am now going out on my terrace anytime the temperature is above 62 degrees, right? And I get to see the city. I get to feel the drumbeat of the city, even though most people are indoors. I just love having some green space that I can sit in New York City. That just feeds me. I'm finding time, as I mentioned, to meditate. And let me tell you, I don't know about the rest of your listening audience, but for me, meditation is a calming, relaxing, thought-provoking, spiritual experience. And I don't know how I went without it all this time. I was barely holding on. So I find joy in meditating because then I feel like I can go inwards, I can find some solace, I can find some quiet, and I can just be with myself. And so I love doing that. And I'm actually starting to read some things because honestly, since I've started this company, I've read about one book. All of my other readings are plays and scripts. I mean, I read them by the dozen. And even those, I have like a list of 25 in my queue that I have not yet read. But I'm able to pick one off hither and yon when I couldn't do that before COVID-19. And the last thing I would say is, last two things. One, I get to spend more time with my partner, though I am, I'll spend a lot of time working at my computer. And then the last thing is I get to work on little projects around the house that I've been putting off for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, that's all good stuff. That's all, so well, listen. I fixed a knob on a drawer that had been broken for 2 years.
Right, exactly.
Look, I'm patting myself on the back.
Exactly, you should. Both hands.
You're gonna make it a hug. Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you for making time for me, Ron. And thank you for, you know, always making space for me. I hope to see you in New York in person soon.
Yeah, please. I would love that. I miss your face. I mean, it's nice to see it here, but I miss your company and your energy because your energy is so positive and so amazing. I love it. And I always feel better when I leave you than before I met you.
Well, I miss your energy more, and I'll hopefully see you very soon. Thank you. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you offline.
Okay, darling. Be well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.